All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to Passions Podcast. I am your regular host, Latara, here back again with Steven, who has hosted a week before last. Is that right?
Yeah, I was here for 391 through 395. It's great to be back.
Yeah, so welcome back, Steven. I liked you so much. I had to have you back on.
It's great to be back. It's a great week of passions to be talking about, one for the books.
Definitely better than last week's episodes, which were very boring. So boring.
They always make you wait for it. So it naturally, it would be this week where nothing happens, built up to this week where it's like, I can't miss, you know, one episode.
Yeah. So let's jump right in today. Let's start today with the magic storyline. Fun stuff this week.
Sure that like it was probably like mixed reactions when it aired, but I was so here for it. I was so here for this book club with, you know, Tabitha and Timmy. And I'm not really sure like when Timmy is just like presenting himself as a little boy versus when he's presenting himself as a doll. We'll get to that, but right. Yeah, and then to kind of go full Norman Bates later in the week, things took a quick turn.
Let's start with Tabby and Tabitha and Timmy. I didn't write a summary because whatever, I'm really flying by the seat of my pants these days on this podcast. I'm getting what I can get done. Anyway, so let's start with Timmy and Tabitha. They've flown across the country to go to the Bates Motel, apparently. Timmy and Tabitha are in this hotel room, and Norma like checks them in. She's not Norman Bates, she's Norma. So like there's all of this, like all of these references to Psycho in this place. And it's just crazy to me that Tabitha of all people is like, there's something so familiar about this place, but I just can't put my finger on it.
Like, are you serious?
Are you serious? Like a motel, this person's going on and on about the shower being the greatest shower. And then anyway, so they went to the bookstore in last week's episodes, and that's where we pick up with them in these episodes, is they're at the bookstore and like holding court. The people at this bookstore are scrambling to get this book, to get it signed by Tabitha, because at first they don't see her and realize she's there, but then when they do, they're like, oh my gosh, it's the authoress herself. And so Tabitha and Timmy are like holding court, and Timmy is talking to these people. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, I was very like, and this happened last week too with Timmy, where even in doll mode, the stewardess, or not stewardess, she got real upset about that. The flight attendant was really upset by Timmy talking to her, but he was in doll mode. So like, I don't understand what the rules are of Timmy's, like, when people can hear him and when they can't.
What are the rules?
Seriously. Nice reference. But I honestly was like, Timmy is in doll mode, and up until this point that has been generally the rule, that Timmy, when he's in doll mode and he looks like a doll, nobody can hear him but Tabitha. That has been the rule, and then all of a sudden we have decided that that is no longer the rule. But anyway, nobody's having
anymore, so all the rules are out the door, apparently.
Well, no, because there's some more rules being broken in Harmony that we will talk about as well that are pissing me off too. So anyway, they're holding court. They're reading this book. It's a big commercial for this book, right? Like,
oh my god, it's NBC. It's a 5-episode infomercial.
Exactly. It's NBC's like product placement for this book. One person's like, I bet it'll go onto Oprah's best sellers list or whatever. Yeah. Like Oprah's favorite things. And it was fun. It was light.
There was one woman like grabbing like 4 or 6 copies, being like, I have to get as many as I can, you know. And I have, you know, I have the book, I've got the hardcover, and I've even got the paperback.
I've only got the paperback.
But the paperback's good because it has like, it has a couple little extra things at the end there. It was a little bit extra. I will say, like, the book is what it is. It's a nice little nod to the show and its history, but like they went in hard.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? Honestly, we're reading the book in book club right now, which by the time this airs book club, we will be done with the book. But it's actually, I was really surprised at how well written the book actually is. Like, yeah. Tabitha really took some time to really truly write her diaries in the most in beautiful prose. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, like, I guess Alice Alfonsi is, I guess, the this ghost writer or whatever you would call it, that worked on the book. But, you know, it was actually interesting at times, and you know, with a little bit more mature than I expected, like with Julian and his, you know, coke problems and
the sex, you know, scenes.
Yeah.
It went like full Harley Quinn novel. Like it's anyway, it's good. Anyway, they're all talking about this book. Everybody loves this book. Tabitha says to Timmy, you know, the people, she's worried that the people in Harmony are going to burn her at the stake again, mm-hmm. or try to kill her because she has revealed all of their secrets to the world. And this is when Timmy says, well, you put that spell in the back of the book, which is a great spell. I wonder if where's my book? It's over there somewhere, but it is a great spell. And it's like, dear reader, actually, you know what? I'm going to go get the book.
Yes, do it.
All you who read these words, a spell is cast on you to forget in harmony that every word is true. Like a dream you won't recall, all my secrets you've read here, they will fade from memory, keeping my neck in the clear. Tabby. Like, I love that that's how they decided
iconic.
That's how we're going to get
over it. That's a great way to end the book.
I love that that's how they decided we're going to like get how we're going to get around all of this.
Yeah.
That we're just going to give everybody mass amnesia and like hope that it, and she says at one point, she's like, I hope everybody does read to the end of the book. Like, you know, because if you don't read to the end of the book, you don't read the spell. And so
point.
You don't,
yeah.
Then you would remember it. So again, like as you're reading the book, you would know these things. You know what I mean? Like you don't read. Well, I guess they're trying to make it seem like this is the kind of book you read in one sitting.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, you know, it's a little bit inconsistent as well because, you know, all these people are like roaming to the bookstore to grab as many copies of this book that they can. And it's like, well, if you've read it and you know that it's great and it's all this, but it's, you wouldn't remember the content if you'd actually read it. So it's just a little bit unclear, like how there can be so much critical acclaim for this book that folks can't really remember the content.
I guess people are talking it up as they read it, but then I don't know, whatever. By the time they finish it, I guess it all balances out in the wash because everybody's going to finish the book and nobody's going to remember eventually, I guess. I don't know. Let's move on. Let's go back to this motel where Tabitha decides she's going to take a shower and Tammy decides she wants to take a copy of the book Hidden Passions to Norma's father, right? So Timmy heads off to the big house to give this copy of this book to this man. Tabitha goes to get in the shower, and Norma, who's been like walking around a lot, like looking for knives, sharpening knives.
Yeah, sharpening the knife outdoors, like.
Yeah, just very over the top kind of shit. She has decided to kill Tabitha with an axe instead of a knife.
Yeah.
And so she shows up with her axe, rips open the shower curtain and starts like hacking away at Tabitha. And we see like blood in the drain and Tabitha falls and like the shower curtain's over her. And like Norma's like, I did a good job, Norman. She's talking to Norman, which is Norman Bates. I'm very confused about who she's supposed to be. Cause at first I was like, oh, are they just gonna go to the Bates Motel? But now it's like, I guess she has taken over for Norman. And maybe taught her.
Maybe Norma is like Norman's child and this is the next generation.
That was my next thought too. Is like, is the man, is the father Norman? Am I supposed to believe that's Norman Bates? I guess so, right? But then she calls him, but then she says Norman. She talks about Norman, not about father. And when she's talking about her dad, she talks about her dad. So
are they siblings?
Confusing.
I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
I don't know.
You know what? We're trying to give the writers a little bit too much credit here, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to make sense of the senseless, to be honest. So anyway, that's what's going on with them. Tabitha's been hacked up. God only knows what's going to happen. Like, I sincerely do not remember. I remember this, like, vaguely. I remember this was going to happen, but I don't remember, like, why or how this happened. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I don't really know how we're going to get, how Tabitha's going to get out of it. I mean, we finished the week with Tabitha, you know, being Janet Leigh, you know, dead in the shower. I don't really know how she's going to explain away, oh, like I pretended I was dead so Norma would stop, or I have no idea how they're going to explain this away next week.
It's interesting too, because Tabitha, like, can't, it seems that Tabitha can't die.
Mm-hmm.
But because they showed us her being burned at the stake and then coming back to life, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Because they can't, right. You know, she's an immortal and can't die. Is that connected to her power or not? Because she doesn't have her powers. So just a little something to crunch on. I don't know. I
just have to say a cute little side note. The on the, like, original broadcast of the on the NBC version of the episodes, when Norma was coming in with the axe in the Psycho parody, they were using the music from Dark Shadows, which is like a really old soap opera from the 1960s, which, like, had vampires and werewolves and parallel time, and it's one that I enjoyed quite a lot as a kid. I recently interviewed one of the stars of the show, still alive, so it was really kind of cute to hear that music, and nostalgic to take me back a little farther in time.
I never would have picked up on that. One of my aunts used to watch Dark Shadow. She loved it. But I never really got into it. But that's an interesting that you picked that up, because I absolutely never would have recognized it. You know what I mean? So that's cool.
Yeah, totally. Well, when you've watched like 1,000 episodes or something, like, you know, like, you know, after a little while. But yeah, it was cute.
Yeah, I mean, if I heard the Passions music somewhere else, I'd be like, oh my totally. God, that's like Tabitha's theme music.
Yeah.
100%. So before we go back to Harmony, let's talk about Timmy. And let's talk about Timmy. So Tabitha's been, like, slashed up with an axe. Timmy goes to this house, to the big house, to give a copy of the book to Norma's father, right? And what happens?
Oh my gosh. So Timmy goes up into the house and he's like, you know, it's so nice to meet you, sir. My name is Timmy. I'm just bringing you this New York Times best-selling book, you know, your very own copy. And, you know, Timmy walks into this room and the father is sitting in a...
It's okay, sorry. Say it again.
Yeah. So, you know, Timmy walks into the living room and the father is sitting in, like, a reclining chair with his back to Timmy. And Timmy's just going on about the book and, maybe I should make you a batch of Martimmies. And when Timmy comes around the corner, he realizes that the father is literally just a skeleton, dressed up, and Timmy freaks out. And as he tries to run away, he steps on the recliner and it rolls forward and the skeleton falls right on top of Timmy. Traumatizing. I don't care if you're a doll or a human. That's scary.
It was fucked up. The skeleton, the corpse, it's a corpse, man.
The corpse
just falls over on Timmy, a decomposing corpse, and he realizes, oh my gosh, I gotta get the fuck out of here. But he's, like, trapped. The corpse, like, holds on to him, kind of. It's not really holding on to him, but he gets caught by its hands, and he finally gets out of there. And then he's like, I gotta go warn Tabitha. Good thing there's no cats around here. Ugh, and then there's a cat.
Yeah, of course. And they show its shadow. Like, it was a little bit extra. I honestly, it really kind of ruined a really great kind of sequence of segments there, but whatever, what have you. I think the saddest part of all is that Timmy really wanted to spend that night watching Psycho on VHS for the first time. I don't think he'd ever seen Psycho. And of course he rented it from the bookstore slash Blockbuster that they were at beforehand. But anyway, he lived it. He didn't really get to watch it. Cute note though, like, I don't know, you've seen Psycho, of course, right?
Yeah.
My partner took me to see it. It was in theaters a couple of years ago here in Halifax, and it like fell right on my birthday. And so we went and saw Psycho in theaters, like on the big screen. And that was such a cool experience. There weren't people running out of the theater like they had been in 1960, but it was a cool experience.
Yeah, all right, cool. Psycho is it's a classic. It definitely scarred me though. I can't when I'm here by myself, like sometimes I have a hard time like showering. Still, seriously.
Oh my God, of course. Yeah.
And it's not that I think somebody's gonna like come in and like stab me or anything, but it's just that idea of being so unaware of what is happening outside of the shower. Absolutely. Because it is such a
vulnerable place to be.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, so that's what's going on with Tabitha on the other side of the country, apparently. So let's go back to Harmony and see what's going on with these children. Kay, oh boy, Jesus. Kay is trying to get Charity to go into her bedroom because Hecuba wants Charity to go into her bedroom because Hecuba has once again opened up the gates of hell in Charity's closet. I was confused by a couple of things in these episodes. Number one, Hecuba keeps trying to get Charity into the room with her, but she told us 10 episodes ago, maybe 15, I can't be in the same room with Charity. That's why I need your help.
Oh, Kay. Yeah, that's right.
And now in these episodes, she's been in the room with Charity kind of a lot. So maybe she's just grown more powerful. I don't know. You got any answers for that?
I got none. I have even more questions about Reese's like spirit
Ghostbuster machine
vacuum. I don't know.
So okay, Kay's trying to get Charity to go into her bedroom at Hecuba's behest. Charity's terrified. She's like, no, I feel like there's something evil in there. But Kay, and she did this last week and they kind of picked up in the same place and did the same conversation again, Kay basically is like, you're being a baby, do you want Miguel to have do you want to be a burden to Miguel? Do you want him to have to baby you his whole life and miss out on opportunities because you're scared to do simple shit, basically, she says to her. And Charity's like, you know what? You're right. I'm just going to face my fears. And she starts to go into the room. And then we hear Reese like knocking downstairs. It's like, Kay, Charity, are you here? I'm downstairs. I've been knocking for hours. Like, go home, Reese. So they go downstairs and Reese has shown up with a Ghostbuster machine. He showed up with a machine from Ghostbusters. Have you seen that movie?
No, I actually haven't. Isn't that cruel?
You've never seen any Ghostbusters?
No, I haven't.
As bad as Laura. They, listen, they have these like, I don't remember what they call them. I think it's like plasma something, but I think he calls it the same fucking thing. These like plasma packs that can like bust the ghosts, like they can, okay, kill ghosts with them and like suck them up and stuff. So it's basically the exact same thing that Reese has. And he says to Kay and Charity when they come downstairs and see him with this fucking monstrosity, this contraption that he built himself, he says he looked it up on the internet how to build it, so it should work perfectly. He was like, it should work because I looked up all of the things I need to know on the internet. And it's like, Reese, what? So apparently this thing can detect, let's see what I wrote, can detect if something doesn't have a soul or if something is evil. Like very specifically, Reese says, this thing will capture anything without a soul. Okay. All right. Okay, specifically, Kay
doesn't have totally a soul. Yeah.
So he starts walking around with this thing, shooting plasma. I honestly, it was such a mess. And he wasn't getting any readings at first, and then it kind of zeroed in on Kay.
Yeah.
And they don't make the assumption that she doesn't have a soul. Although Charity kind of looks at her quizzically, like, and suspiciously, like, but Reese just thinks the thing is kind of on the fritz. Then it like detects Hecuba and sucks her from wherever the fuck she was. And so Hecuba's like screaming and yelling, Kay, you better help me. But Charity and Reese can't see Hecuba.
Oh, man.
So Charity and Reese can't see Hecuba, but Kay can see Hecuba. And Kay, Hecuba's screaming for Kay to save her. She's like, Kay, save me, save me. Kay is like, you know what? This might be best, the best option for all of us. Kay's like, you know, maybe I should just let you get sucked into oblivion. But then Hecuba says, if I go, so does your soul.
Yeah.
And then that makes Kay kind of say, oh my gosh, what can I do about this? And she kind of grabs at Hecuba at first, but I guess there's just like nothing there. I don't understand how the fuck this worked, but she tries to grab at Hecuba, but she can't grab her because I guess she's plasma. I don't know. So then she kind of walks around to the other side of Reese and spills her soda on the machine by accident. She's like, oops, I'm so sorry. And then this incredible machine just shorts out because a little sprinkle of soda. And Hecuba flies out of there. And Reese is like, oh, man, I got to take this thing home and fix it, basically. So he leaves, which Hecuba was trying to
put it in some rice.
Hecuba was trying to get him out of there anyway because she wants to kill Charity and she needs Charity alone for that. But at one point, Hecuba was like, I'm going to rid the entire world of that boy, Reese. Like, maybe it's time that Reese be, the world be rid of that boy or something like that. And Kay is like, no, you can't. You promised you wouldn't. Like, you don't even like Reese.
I know, right? Like, whatever.
You don't even like Reese. But anyway, Reese emerges unscathed. Okay. He's
spared. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes home and Kay gets Charity back up to her room again. And this time Charity goes into the room after some back and forth. They do the same back and forth for a long time. Like, oh, you can't be scared. There's nothing to be afraid of. Oh, but for some reason, I really feel there's so much evil here. Whatever. Eventually, they go in the room. Charity gets Kay to open the door for her. So she opens the door, realizes nothing's in there. So she goes into the room. Kay comes in with her. And then they sit down and have like the oddest conversation. Charity says to Kay, you know, I love you because you're so fearless and you would never let something like this scare you. And if you were scared of something, you would face your fear. And if you thought that the flames of hell were in your closet, you just go over to the closet and fling the doors open to prove that there was nothing there. So that's what I need to do too. All right, girl. So Charity goes over to the closet. She opens the closet. There's actually nothing there. Wonderful. Fabulous. But then she turns her back to the closet. And Hecuba like throws the flames into the closet again. And then Charity starts being dragged to hell by like the souls inside the closet. And that's when she starts screaming for Kay to help her. Now, at this point, Hecuba reveals herself to Charity. Now, Hecuba's been in the room the entire time. This is another thing I'm confused. I mean, it's the same thing I'm confused about. How can Hecuba be in the same room as Charity when she told us flat out that the reason that she needed Kay's help was because she can't be in the same room as Charity?
Exactly.
No, this was never explained. And it never will be. And that's why I'm so upset. I'm so hurt. I don't know why. This is expected. This should be expected.
Really, like, God bless Passions, but the show really punishes viewers for paying attention.
Yeah, I've been watching it for 400 episodes. I should know better. I really should. But anyway, Charity's being dragged to hell and she's screaming to Kay for help, and Hecuba starts taunting her like, Kay can't help you because I have her soul and she feels nothing for you. Just, you can scream all you want, but she can't feel anything because I have her soul. And Charity's just yelling like, Kay, I know it isn't true. I know deep down you don't want me to die. Come and help me, Charity. Come and help me, Kay. You don't want to listen to her. Don't listen to her, Kay. And she's screaming. And Kay finally heeds the call and tries to help Charity and starts kind of pulling on her. And Hecuba tells Kay, let her go or you're going to be dragged to hell with her. Do you want to die with Charity or do you want your happily ever after? Here's my other question. What happens once Charity's gone? Right? Like if Hecuba wasn't like double crossing Kay, right? Because I'm pretty sure that's what's going on anyway. But if Hecuba really was going to follow through with everything she said, Charity, as long as Charity goes, you can have your soul back. You can have everything you ever wanted. How? Charity's missing, right? There's no body. She's just gone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like, right.
What's the aftermath of that? And how does Kay explain it? Does Kay say, oh, Charity just left? Or does she say, like, I went to lay down, I woke up and Charity wasn't here anymore? Yeah,
she's going to be the last person who saw Charity alive.
Right. And just a few hours ago, Charity was like accusing her of something nefarious, right? Like Charity was flat out shaking her down, saying like, you know what the hell's going on and you're just not saying anything.
Well, she's accused Kay of not having a soul already, hasn't she?
No, because now, no, she never accused her of not having a soul. She basically just could tell that something was up with Kay, but she didn't know exactly what it was. No, now she knows that Kay doesn't have a soul because Hecuba has just like flat out said it. So that's really what's going on in magic. You got anything to add?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it was quite a wild week for magic, but I think that like the best material was kind of outside of Harmony down by the Bates Motel at the bookstore. And the rest was a little bit just dragging it out to get through the week, to get us through the next week in Harmony. You know, the Helen Charity's Closet story is iconic. And when people think of passions, like they think of Helen Charity's Closet, but we don't think about how fucking long this storyline was. Holy shit.
It is very long. I mean, we picked this up in the caves, in the ruins. That's how long it's been.
The mine shaft.
Yeah, that's where we started this whole Hecuba saga. That's been so long ago. And we still have so far to go, you know? So I don't know. I'm excited that things are starting to happen and we shall see. Mm-hmm. Let's talk Shuice.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's just talk Shuice because this is an easy one this week, honestly. So we pick up this week and Sheridan and Luis are still out in the, what they call that, solarium? It's like a sunroom.
Yes, I've never heard of that before, Passions. So solarium.
I've heard of a solarium, but I always thought a solarium, well, I guess it's kind of like I guess a sunroom and a solarium are very similar. But I always thought, I think of solarium and atrium as like similar things, but like atriums had like living plants inside and shit, I think. Anyway, I don't know. That's something for y'all to Google. What's a solarium? What's an atrium? But anyway, they're in what Sheridan calls the solarium. And, Sheridan, we pick up with Sheridan, who has been sharing the saddest stories about her childhood with Luis. Bless this lady's heart. She talked about how she had a doll that she really, really loved, and it was her only friend because Alistair and Julian would never let her play with like local kids because they thought that she was too good for them. So she had this doll that was her only friend once her mother died. And then one day Alistair saw that it had gotten dirty. And so he threw it away and she never saw it again because he said it wasn't fit for a crane. And then she sees like her old tea set and talks about how she never had a tea party with any friends because she didn't have any friends. So then Luis, oh, sweet, sweet, sweet. Luis has his moments. Luis goes out, says, I'll be right back. He goes out. He comes back with like a pitcher of lemonade. And he's like, I've had plenty of tea parties with my little sisters. And let me teach you how it's done. And they have like a sweet little tea party. He even brings back a little like sun hat for her, like a little tea party hat, which where did he get that? Where did that come from? But I would say I'm not asking questions, but I just asked the question. So they have a little tea party. It's very, very, it's so sweet. Sheridan at one point is like really worried that they're gonna break up. She, after this lovely display, she's just like, my family has done everything to keep me unhappy, basically, that take anything from me that I want and that I think is good for me, and they tear everything away from me, and I'm so worried that they're gonna do that to you and they're gonna find a way to break us up. And Luis says, you know, there's no way. I love you too much, you mean too much to me, and we have no secrets between us. Oh no. He's like, we know everything about each other, which, you know what, I would say, I mean, they've only been dating for like a day, but it's like since she woke up, but they have been together in close proximity for basically a year, because he's been her bodyguard for about a year. Right. So I'm sure they do know a lot about each other, probably more than Ethan and Teresa know about each other, honestly.
Okay.
So, he says, we know everything about each other. We have no secrets between us. I mean, and both of them feel that this is true. Unfortunately, Alistair's in his office, like playing that tape on repeat. Oh my gosh, hypnosis.
He's going to ruin the tape if he plays it over and over so many times.
Of this hypnosis. And so he's been feeling it out, trying to figure out when's the best time to play this tape at this party, right? So then they're all in the solarium. Eve comes in and just to remind us, the show has Sheridan thank Eve again for the hypnosis and everything, and then it's your doing that Luis and I are together, and thank you so much, without you I would never have found love, yada yada yada, right? Well, Luis gets a phone call. He answers the phone and it's Alistair, but Luis doesn't know it's Alistair. He's like, hey, who's this? And Alistair's like, don't worry about it. I just have something that I feel like you'd be very interested to hear. Eve knows immediately that it's Alistair. How she knows, I don't know. But Eve knows immediately that it's Alistair. And I'm, you know what? I'm on board, because her senses are heightened. So, okay. So she says to Luis, you should hang up the phone right now. So suspicious. So incredibly suspicious. Hang up the phone. He's like, wait a minute, what? Why? And she's like, oh, it's probably just a telemarketer or somebody playing a prank on you. You should just hang it up because it's not important. And Luis is like, well, let me just see what they want. He gets back on the phone. He's like, what can I help you with? And before Alistair can play the tape, I think it was somebody comes out and says, Julian's gonna make a speech, we want everybody inside for the speech. I think Ethan comes out and tells Sheridan he wants them inside for the speech. So Eve is like, let me handle this phone call for you. I'll handle this. You go on, you two scurry on inside. I'll handle this phone call for you. She gets on the phone with Alistair, and she scolds him, saying like, how can you be so cruel to your daughter? Why don't you care about her happiness? And Eve has had this conversation with Alistair so many times at this point, like she should know. And he says to her, I am a crane. The crane. Like, I am not just a crane, I am the head crane, and I don't give a fuck. I'm gonna do whatever I need to do to protect this family. Yes. Which is not what he's doing at all.
If we go back to Hidden Passions on the book, we really learn a lot through this book just how much Alistair got in the way of Julian and Eve's relationship, and it almost humanize Julian in a lot of ways. I'm not sure how far you've gotten in the book, but as it goes on and you see just how torn Julian is between Eve and being what his father wants as a crane, it's really interesting. But then I don't know why Eve is so surprised that Alistair is so cold and so cruel. I mean, he literally stole your child. She doesn't know that. But yeah. Like, you know what he's capable of by now, right?
Right. Well, apparently not. She's going to keep having this conversation with him. I guess she's going to try and save this man's soul. She's a missionary on a mission. But he tells her, listen, my daughter can't be with Luis. Luis is trash. He says that flat out. Luis is trash. And then she goes, I'm not going to let you destroy them. Okay. He says, well, you're just delaying the inevitable. It's mm-hmm. going to happen. But Eve works her ass off at this party to keep this from happening. And I applaud her for it. Honestly, Eve is making the turn from where I was like, oh, I don't like this woman because of the way she was treating Chad, to, all right, Eve. Okay, Eve. I'm on board. And which I knew it would happen, because I remember liking Eve watching this show.
Oh, yes.
As a kid. So I knew they were going to do some better things with her. But she works her ass off to keep them from hearing this tape. So first she finds Chad after Julian makes his little speech to the couple and everything. She gets Chad to play a song, a specific song. She's like, do you have Teresa and Ethan's favorite song? Can you play it right now on a CD? And so he's like, yeah, I got it. I'm going to go play it on the sound system. He plays it on the sound system. Everybody dances. And then we see one of Alistair's like assistants walk into his office and is like, sorry, sir. It hands him the tape. It's like, I can't play the tape because they're playing something on the sound system. Where the fuck is Alistair?
Yeah,
is
I know.
Is he in
right?
this house somewhere?
And he has access to the intercom of the crane. It's so cartoonish, but I love it so much. But I've got to say, though, wasn't that song like Crystal's song, like Crystal Harris?
I think so. I think that's the song that they danced to for the first time at the Blue Note. Yeah, for sure.
Well, she's long dead and gone. Eve isn't even thinking about her anymore.
All right, Crystal, R.I.P. Yeah. Bless it. And they never solved her murder. They just decided
they did
she was
her wrong.
They just decided she was a drug dealer or a drug addict, and it wasn't worth figuring out. Sam is the worst at his job. He's a crooked cop, man.
Well, they
I
weren't
swear.
Really a good person, so is it a bad thing that we didn't solve the case?
Right. They're like, well, good riddance. Goodbye. Like, who cares? I know there's probably still a murderer on the loose in this town, but oh well.
And the jewel thief,
which I maintain the jewel thief is Hank. I maintain that. I'm going to keep holding on to hope that they will bring that up. I don't think they will, but I think they dropped that little nugget in there and was like, if we want to use it again, we will, but yes. Then decided never to use it again. But I'm never going to forget it. Cause I talked about it so much, but anyway. So Eve manages to keep the tape from being played because the lady specifically says they're playing a CD and we can't play this tape at the same time. Like, okay, what's the tech behind this? What's the science behind it? Where is Alistair? Again, where is Alistair? Like, is he in a secret place in the mansion? Has he just been in the mansion this entire fucking time? You know what I mean? Like, is he just in a secret alcove that literally nobody, the grotto that nobody knows about?
Maybe he's like in Trump Tower, like the Crane Empire. Maybe he has his own kind of like office, or I don't know. But yeah, as the show goes on, it really just seems like he's upstairs in this private, high clearance, top secret lair.
Yeah. So Eve manages to get the song played so that Alistair can't play this tape. Then she makes quick work of getting Luis and Sheridan the fuck out of there. Mm-hmm. She's like, how about the two of you go on home? I know you've been trying to get into each other's pants all night. Why don't you just go on and get out of here? She's like, I'm giving you, as your doctor, I'm giving you the go ahead. And so they're like, don't have to tell me twice. So they leave. And I'm like, yeah, I was like, go Eve. Good job, yeah. Eve. Way to go, girl. And as they're leaving, this was very interesting, especially since you were talking about how Julian is like humanized in the book. I feel like this week they humanized Julian for me in a couple of ways. This was the first way. Julian sees Luis and Sheridan leaving the party and he stops them and says, you know, are you leaving? And Sheridan says, yeah, we've been here long enough. We're ready to go, basically. And he basically lets them go. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of me thinks that he did that because he does want Sheridan to have some little bit of happiness, and so he was letting her go so that they wouldn't have to hear that tape tonight. because he was never really fully on board with this plan. You could tell in his face and the way he was like, I don't, you sure, father? Are you sure about this? You know, he was not really fully on board with the plan anyway. And I think Julian cares for Sheridan. I think he really does. I think he just is so, has had such a horrible upbringing and has been, and has learned everything he knows from a monster, from a bad, bad man, you know?
Oh, totally. And we got to think, like, Julian was so much older than Sheridan. Like, he was being conditioned as, like, an adult by the time Sheridan was even born and into the family.
Exactly. So, and I think I've said this before, Julian is bad. Don't get me wrong. Julian is a villain. He is bad, bad, bad news. But there's a heart there, and part of what makes him so bad is his upbringing and how he was, and how he was treated. He's bad, but he's also a victim. Julian's also a victim of abuse from his father. God,
children learn what they live.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's crazy. I have such complicated feelings around Julian. I really do. Especially this week. So he lets them leave. They head out. They don't get very far though. They come back because Sheridan left her bag. Girl, you live on this estate. Just go home. Come back tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
What's in it that you need? You live here. It's not like you're leaving it at a bar. It was a tiny bag, and the only thing that was in it was like her compact. I guess she was worried about that compact because Luis gave it to her, and they made a big deal about that last week about her compact. He's like, "You still have it?" It's like, "Yeah, it still works." Yeah, and you're still my boyfriend now. Of course, I have it. But anyway. They come back and Alistair comes over the loudspeaker and is like, "Hello guests, I have an announcement to make." He's like, "Something that's going to change all of our lives forever." Then he's like, I don't know what that lady is, secretary, receptionist, I don't know who she is, assistant, comes in and is like, "You're going to want to see this, Mr. Crane," and makes him stop short. Shows him the tabloid of Ethan being Sam's son. And then he's like, "You know what? I'll make this announcement later. Goodbye." Like, you know, it's like, I can't let these people hear me or see me sweat. And so that's where we leave it with Sheridan and Luis, except for they go back. I mean, it's not where we leave it. They go back to the cottage and then make love. It was a lot. Like, there was a lot of them making love this week.
I think it's going to just be them making love for like weeks and weeks and weeks while the things that happen at the Bates Motel and at the mansion kind of play out. There needs to be some filler in some way, but
yeah. So I don't really have much to say about that. There's like candles lit everywhere. The interesting thing about this is how is that cottage not burned to the fucking ground? Because she lit those candles well before they went to the party. She like showed him all the candles. She's like, "This is what you have to look forward to when we come back." All the millions of candles lit up in her home, and then she left them unattended.
This is what you have to come home to. Nothing.
Yeah. Ashes.
Yeah.
The ruins of the Crane Cottage. Arson. So anyway, they come back and they make sweet, sweet love and say sweet, sweet things to each other. They've been having some very nice, tender moments for the last couple of weeks. And it's very nice before the shit hits the fan, because the shit's about to hit the fan for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I do think they go in a different direction with breaking up Luis and Sheridan, though. I'm pretty sure they decide to go a different route than that tape, if I remember correctly. Do you remember?
My partner and I were watching. We're doing his kind of first watch. We're almost around like episode 600. Mm-hmm. And so I think at some point we're going to kind of see a shift where that tape, the relevance of the tape kind of drops for a little while, much right. Like a lot of things in the show. But of course, I'm sure it's going to come back around eventually.
Oh, yeah. All right. Before we go on, I want to say a quick thank you to all of our fabulous patrons. Thank you to Munache, Marcus, Erica, Brelin, Lisa, Zach, Sid, Sarana, Dustin, Heather, Randall, Ashley, Shannon, Hannah, Camelia, Amanda, Monique, Samantha, Amy, Jeanette, and Eric. Thank you all very, very much. And remember, if you also would like to become a patron, you can just hop on over to patreon.com/passionspodcast and choose the tier that is most agreeable to you. So we're going to move on to this party. Oh my gosh, this party. This fucking party. Listen, I can't for the life of me, and I made this point last week, but I'm going to keep making this point. Why is no one more suspicious of Rebecca and Gwen throwing this party?
Right?
Like, how is anybody at this party? I would not, if I was Teresa, no fucking way could that bitch be throwing me a party. Absolutely not. She tried to murder her.
Baseball bat yesterday, and now you're throwing me an engagement party. Something ain't right.
Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. I don't trust it. Okay. So I don't even understand how we even managed to get to this point. Like, how are y'all having this party? You would think that somebody would have put a stop to it. Teresa, Pilar,
even Ivy, maybe.
Ivy especially. You would think that Ivy especially would put a stop to it, because it's very obvious that Rebecca is up to something, you know? But she didn't. So here we are. Let's talk about it some more. Some more. This party goes, it's the night that never ends. So let's actually start with the troubled marriages situation. What's going on over here? Mm-hmm. TC, let's start with TC and Eve. TC overhears Eve talking about a baby that died. We talked about this last week. And he deduces that it was Julian's baby, but that the mother was like some kind of maid or something. So then he goes on this rant about how he could never respect a woman who would have sex with Julian, or who would debase herself to be with a man like Julian Crane. And then he says, that's why I love you so much, honey, because you're perfect. You don't have a past like that. Like, it's so, so on the nose. It's so, like, it's just so obvious the way they wrote this. It's so irritating.
It's not even like fun to watch. It's just like, it's insulting to Eve, it's insulting to TC, and it's insulting to us.
It's insulting to everybody, every woman everywhere, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
He talks about, he says, oh, well, that woman, if she ever wants to have a good, healthy relationship, she has to be upfront about her past with Julian, with whoever she's with. And I, you know what, I'm going to ask you how you feel about this, because personally, I disagree. I don't think that woman has to tell the next man anything if she doesn't want to. Like, there is no baby. So the hypothetical situation is that this woman got pregnant, the baby died, she lost the baby at birth. That's a pretty traumatizing thing to go through. And it was Julian's baby, whatever. Oh, yeah. And the situation that these two have come up with is that this woman was seduced by Julian, right? So she also there's like this power dynamic. And so there's this idea that it's almost like an assault on this woman. She doesn't have to tell the next man that if she doesn't want to. I can see why she would want to tell him that. But if she doesn't want to, I don't think it's that big of a betrayal to not tell somebody.
It's not a prerequisite to the relationship.
That you lost a baby.
Say, this is, you know, no, you've said it. You're absolutely right. There's no need for... you know, that's just TC. Being TC is just, and the thing that I don't understand is TC knows that Julian is this vile kind of abusive man. So why is he attacking the women? Shouldn't he recognize that there's this perpetrator, and that the cycle of violence is, you know, coming from the same place, regardless of who the woman might be? It's like, obviously it's sexist, but it's just very inconsistent, and it's just poor writing.
Yep, I agree. Okay, as long, I'm glad we're on the same page, because I honestly was just like, you know, if you want to share that kind of thing, I think that is something, like if I were in that woman's position, that is probably something I would share if I was getting serious with somebody. If I was getting serious with somebody, but I wouldn't feel like I had to. I would just think it's important, especially if you're thinking about having kids, that that person understands how traumatic that might be for you to have another child.
Sure, but not sharing that with someone should not be a deal breaker in any way.
And it certainly shouldn't be looked at as some sort of major betrayal, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Or in my opinion,
this act of deceit or something like that.
Yeah. In my opinion, y'all can write to me and tell me what y'all think, how you feel about it. That's just how I feel about it. So anyway, he goes on talking about, I cannot imagine any woman I love being involved with a man like Julian Crane. He just attacks women who have slept with Julian, which Julian's the bad guy. Anyway, that's when Eve kind of dismisses herself and goes to find Sheridan and Luis. And so that's really where we leave it with TC and Eve this week. But I just felt like it was really important to pick up with them where they left off last week. So let's talk about Grace and Ivy and Sam.
Before we go on, Latara, we do need to mention that TC had this flashback to his childhood, where he was in a locker room with his father talking about this tennis match that he didn't win. It was after his knee injury. And, you know, his father saying that, I know that you could have won this tennis tournament, but somebody got in the way. You know, there was this accident or whatever, and somebody is responsible for what happened. So we're finally 400 episodes in, starting to get a little bit of an idea of what happened to TC. It goes into a bit more detail in the book, but we're learning up for the first time kind of exactly what the specifics are of Julian and TC's long-held conflict.
Well, you know, actually, in that flashback, they didn't give us any new information. That's kind of why I left it out, because it was really, they just showed it to us for once, but it really wasn't anything new. It was like, yes, we know that TC had a car accident that mm-hmm. messed up his knee, and that's why, and that he thinks that Julian was responsible for it, and that he feels that his father died of a broken heart because he couldn't play tennis anymore. Like, that's, it literally showed us literally everything. That it was recap. It was, you know, they're just reminding us. They're just reminding us why TC has such deep rooted vitriol and anger against Julian. So yeah, it was an interesting that they did a flashback for TC, though. Finally gave him something. But yeah, they find different ways to recap. It's so much recap.
I know. I you don't realize until the rewatch just how much Tabitha and Timmy are really just vessels of, like, their characters aren't really to bring all this dynamic stuff to the show. It's really just to let people know what's been happening when they're not watching. And when I was a kid watching it for the first time, I thought that all the action was happening with Tabitha and Timmy, and plenty happens, like, you know, Helen's in Charity's closet right now and stuff, but I just didn't remember just how much Timmy especially is just talking about, here's what's happened with Charity. Oh, Tabitha, tell me about Luis and Sheridan's relationship. Oh no, Tabitha, tell me about Ethan and Teresa. It's very repetitive.
They are the Greek chorus, right? They're the Greek chorus, and sometimes they have their own little things, but for the most part, they're not even centered in anything, you know? No. It's really about Tabitha trying to thwart other people's things that they have going on, you know? But anyway, where were we with these people? Oh, Grace, Ivy, Sam. Oh my God. Oh my God. Grace, Ivy, and Sam. So first, Grace is literally the most annoying character. I just think that she
Undisputed.
You know what? That's not true. Charity is the most annoying character. But Grace sometimes is so irritating, aggravating. I can't stand her, like, doe-eyed naivete. Like, girl, get a grip, girl, and figure it out. Like, get a clue, Grace. Yeah, get a fucking clue. So Grace starts out talking about how Teresa is like Cinderella and that, you know, she's a rich boy who marries the young poor girl. And then she says, well, I guess it could happen the opposite way, too. It could be a poor boy and a rich girl. And then Ivy, who is personally, I assume that she's just a little tipsy. Ivy starts telling this story that is literally the story of her and Sam, but she just says it happened to a friend of hers, right? And she's just like, yeah, there was this girl that I knew, and she was in love with this boy who was from a family with of no means, but they were deeply in love, but her father tricked her into marrying somebody else. And then Grace goes in and says, well, if she was tricked into marrying somebody else, then she never really loved him in the first place.
Yeah.
Oh my God. she goes, you know, if I loved someone, no, there's no one or nothing that could ever tear me apart from that person. So it couldn't possibly be true love. Bitch, are you dead ass serious? You know what? I'm so ready for what's coming for Grace. Period. Not what's coming for Grace, like immediately what's coming for Grace, but like what's coming for Grace in a little while.
Sure.
The baby stuff. I don't want anybody to think that I do not condone.
Oh my God, no.
No.
A little bit more down the line.
Yeah. But a little bit down the line, I'm very ready for what comes for Grace. honestly, you know what though? That actress deserves better. She deserves better. So I'm glad that they're giving her better.
Definitely.
Later on. She'll give her better.
The Young and the Restless. I mean, you interviewed Dana Spark. She's a very interesting person. It's just like, holy, they really didn't give her much to work with.
No. And then the stuff that they did give her to work with, especially right now, is just like the most irritating lines.
Yeah.
So she says to Ivy, you know, I could never have been separated from the person that I love. It was very sanctimonious, to be honest. It's like, girl, you do not know the whole story, first of all. And how rude. What a rude thing to say.
Yeah, like it's when easy Ivy, for even, you to say.
Even if you don't know that it's Ivy in the story, Ivy said, this is a friend of mine. Mm. Like, I wouldn't want somebody talking about my friend like that. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
So it's just, I don't know. Grace, whatever. So Grace says, you know, there's no way that they ever loved each other. Then she says, you know, there's no way they ever loved each other. And that's when Ivy, it like sets Ivy off and something snaps in her. And she's like, I did love him. Oh, we're doing this now, huh? We're doing this now? So this was so exciting for me because Ivy just kind of let loose. She's like, I did love him. And I was tricked. And so, of course, Grace is mortified because she feels bad that she has said kind of, you know, these mean things about Grace. I mean, about Ivy. So she apologizes. But then very quickly is like, did you ever have children with him? Bitch, are you serious?
I know. Oh my God. It was like 2 weeks ago when Grace walked into Eve's office when Eve was crying and holding those baby booties. And Grace walks in and she's like, did someone lose a baby? Did you lose a baby? And it's like, what the fuck? Like, maybe work your way up to that question, but like, holy shit.
Or don't ask. That's not a question you ask somebody.
You're right.
It's just not a question you ask someone. In any capacity, like the thing with her, with Eve, with the baby booties, that's not a question you ask somebody. But also at a party for this woman's son's engagement, that's not a question you ask.
No.
Chill. Jeez. But anyway, she's like, I don't know where that came from. It just popped into my head and it just came out of my mouth. So it was like a little, they meant us to believe that it was some sort of like a little bit of like magic premonition. Situation going on, whatever. All I know is I was very annoyed by Grace in this moment. So Grace then asks Ivy, after asking her if they had a baby together, is like, well, do you ever see him around town? Like, are you still in touch? Blah, blah, blah. And Ivy's like, yeah, I see him from time to time, as she like stares into Sam's eyes. I mean, staring this man down. Yes, mm-hmm. I see him from time to time, just like staring into his eyes. And Grace is like, and do you ever talk to him? And she's She says, yeah, but he's married. You know, she's like, do you think y'all could ever get back together? She says, well, he's married now. And Grace is like, well, are you friends with his wife? And Ivy's like, yeah, we are friends. And Grace says, well, does she know anything about y'all's past? And Ivy's like, no, she doesn't. And Grace is so scandalized by this. She says, you know, that's really awful that, you know, that woman has no clue. And of course, I'm not angry with you, Ivy, because it's not your place to tell her. But her husband should tell her. She says, I have no respect for a man like that. She said, not at all. And that's when Sam steps in because he's like, wait a minute. I can see my marriage going down the toilet. Bless his heart. So Sam steps in and he's like, Grace, I have something to tell you, ... And then she just interrupts him like she always does. Let me tell you something about Grace. Was so irritating to me. Sam has actually tried to tell Grace about this a few times, but Grace always interrupts him. Always, every single time. And this was no exception. She interrupts him and says, do you know this couple? And he says, you know, yeah, she says they must not be very close. And he says, no, the man loves his wife more than anything. And she says, no, I don't see this is such a major betrayal. I don't see how he could be in love with his wife if he won't tell her something so big. And then Sam says, well, he wanted to tell her at first, but when they first got together, the woman was going through something major and through a difficult time, and he felt that it would be too hard on her. And then Grace is like, well, what about later then? And he says, well, later he felt like too much time had passed and he didn't want to hurt her for no reason, you know, because there was absolutely nothing going on between him and that woman anymore. So that's why that's never happened. But Grace is not having it. She feels very uncomfortable. And it seems that Grace should be getting a clue, but she's not getting a clue. It almost seems like she thinks it might be TC. Grace is not getting a clue. She's not picking up what anybody's putting down. She tries to apologize to Ivy again. This is what happens. She goes to find Ivy because Ivy had to go and like make a speech. She goes and finds Ivy, tries to apologize. But Ivy says, you know what? It's nothing to apologize for. Okay. Then Ivy steamrolls her way into a dance with Sam. She like says to Sam and Grace are like dancing, or maybe they're not dancing. Maybe they're just standing there. But she says like, can I have the honor? Could I dance with Sam? You know, I know you probably need to get off your feet for the little bebé. You know, you got to do something. You know, you got the little baby. You need to chill out, girl. You're doing too much dancing. Let me dance with your man for a little bit. And Grace is like, okay, sure. Dance with him.
Oh God. And Sam is like, why don't you go and get Julian and then we can dance with the person that we are both married to.
But nobody can find Julian.
Nobody can find Julian. And you know what? Grace is pregnant. She needs to rest. She needs to take it easy. Sam, let's take it to the dance floor.
Yep. So they dance. It's cute, I guess. Nobody can find Julian because Julian is learning that his whole life is a lie.
Oh man, he is having a breakdown in the library.
So let's talk about Ethan, Teresa, all of this stuff. Okay, so this whole party's going on. Teresa is like all of a sudden getting these bad feelings that something really bad's going to happen. She says she feels everybody's calling her Cinderella. And so she feels like Cinderella, which means that at midnight, all of her dreams are going to go away. Everything, the stroke of midnight, everything's going to fall to pieces and she's going to lose everything she's ever wanted. She says that to like three people in these episodes. That
just
is the
just 2 weeks ago. She was saying there is nothing that could ever come between us, Ethan. Mm-hmm. And now it's, oh, at the stroke of midnight, everything is going to fall apart. Like, which is it?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is this today. But we know Teresa's got her issues. She swings hot and cold. You know, Teresa is no stranger to a quick, rapid mood swing. Okay.
We love her though.
Well, I definitely do. I'm obsessed. But anyway, we actually don't have a lot with Teresa and Ethan this week. It's mostly about Julian, Rebecca, and this whole scheme to out Ethan's paternity. So let's talk about this. Julian finally goes to his office to meet with this tabloid reporter. And when he goes inside, the man hands him the paper, but Julian doesn't look at it. Julian's like, "Who did you say you were?" And the man says, "I'm a reporter." And then he says he's a reporter for a tabloid. And that's when Julian's like, "No, get the fuck out of here. You can't be here. How did you get here? I'm going to have you arrested, blah, blah, blah." Then Julian still has the paper. He has it rolled up in his side pocket. Rebecca, this entire time, has been like listening from outside. So she knows everything that's going on. So she kind of talks to Julian about hearing the reporter out, but he won't hear it. He won't hear of it. He has him escorted out. Now, Julian's just walking around this party with his bombshell in his pocket.
Like, he's not even just looking at the cover. It's, yeah.
Yeah, they have it folded. So yeah. Every time somebody grabs it, they grab it and it's folded, and then they just kind of put it away to the side or whatever. So yeah, he's walking around with this in his pocket for quite some time. And then Ethan comes to find Julian, says, "I want you to come and make a speech to Teresa." He says, "Come and make a speech to Teresa." Julian goes out, makes his speech, and this speech is not to Teresa. It is to Ethan and his future bride, right? Like, he doesn't even name Teresa he doesn't even say her name. Okay. Talk about disrespect. But you know what? I don't even think Teresa picked up on it. Pilar definitely did. She said something about it, but Teresa didn't even pick up on it, which is,
oh my gosh, did you remember when they had the reporter out in front of the mansion talking about, you know, it's the biggest night of the year, you know, Gwen and Rebecca Hotchkiss are having a party for Ethan Crane and his new fiance, the daughter of the housekeeper, or like the housekeeper's daughter. And it's like, are you fucking serious?
Not only that, she also goes on to say, "I say new because he was supposed to marry Gwen Hotchkiss like a week ago, but now these rushed nuptials have everybody talking." Like,
okay, that was a great line. That was perfect.
So much. That was so. Also, like, I have never once seen televised like a society event.
No,
not ever once. And there's like no families in the U.S. that I can think of that people like follow them besides like the Kardashians, like, you know, yeah, what I mean? And the Cranes aren't like the Kardashians, you know what I mean? It's just interesting to me that there's so much like hubbub and hullabaloo with the press around this, because literally no one gives a fuck when a Vanderbilt gets married. I don't care. You know, no, I don't care. Couldn't tell you when they got married. You know, although Anderson Cooper is also a Vanderbilt, and so
yeah, but
I think I would care if he got married. I'd be like, oh my god, Anderson Cooper.
Oh yeah, when him and Andy Cohen finally tie the knot, I'll be happy for them.
They should definitely get married, but I don't think it will ever happen. Like, Andy, I think Anderson like loves Andy but can't stand him.
Yes. I think that Anderson would be with Andy if he could tone it down a notch.
But we don't need Andy to tone it down.
I love Watch What Happens Live. You know what? I just have to take a moment and say I wrote an article a couple weeks ago about the Don't Say Gay Bill in Florida. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Canadian, so I was kind of exploring how a bill like that could come to pass here in Canada, which ultimately I learned that it's the perfect breeding ground for something like that here. Mm-hmm. Andy Cohen retweeted my article and it was like, what? I mentioned something he said in the article on Watch What Happens Live, just about like, you can't groom children to be gay, you're born gay. And he retweeted my story. So it was like, that was a big one.
Is incredible. I love Andy Cohen. I'm a big fan. I Listen, did you, I mean, you probably didn't watch this because I imagine in Canada, y'all have something else you do on New Year's Eve, but did you watch the New Year's Eve stuff thing that he hosted with Anderson Cooper?
I saw some highlights, if you could call them highlights.
Ow. Oh,
poor guy.
He was so lit. I was loving it. And
oh
you know, we got a
he
new.
He told Bill de Blasio where to go and how to get there. That was iconic. And you could see Anderson just being like, sweetie. Oh, sweetie. Oh, honey. Oh, boy. There's nothing that he could do.
It's just crazy how Anderson puts his job on the line every year for Andy Cohen. Like, yeah. He does. He puts his job on the line.
He does.
Because Andy is unpredictable once he starts drinking. Because that's his shtick. That's his whole thing, is the housewives. And he acts like one of them, you know? He acts like a housewife, especially once they start drinking. Mm-hmm. He'll say whatever. He's messy. I love him.
I will just say he's like, I love Watch What Happens Live, but he is kind of like pushy. Like he asks a lot of like very personal, like sexual questions to a lot of straight men. And I'm just like, that's ballsy to ask, but maybe not in the best way, like on live TV, but you know, whatever. He's messy and we love him for it.
We love him for it. Do you watch 90 Day Fiancé at all?
No, I want to get Discovery Plus just so I can watch 90 Day Fiancé.
Listen, let me tell you very quickly, and then we got to get back to passions. The moderator who does the reunions on 90 Day Fiancé, her name is Shawn Robinson. She's the best in the business. She does a better job than Andy Cohen. And I think Andy Cohen does a good job at the reunions and stuff, but gosh, the things that she can get out of these people is like so impressive. Oh, and she's just so poised about it too. Like, she's never really messy, but she says things that she's like a lawyer. She's like a good lawyer who asks questions that she already knows the answers to all the time, you know?
Yeah, but I feel like Andy, the thing I don't like about Bravo is they're like, so Stephen from Halifax wants to know. And it's like, no, Andy Cohen and the producers want to know.
Yes. You know, the other thing I don't care about with Andy is that sometimes he'll let the bigger stars on the show slide. Like, he lets Teresa get away with murder. He lets Teresa get away with so much nonsense that she says and does. And he doesn't press her the way that he would say Marge Senior, you know, or Junior, Marge
Hell
Junior.
No. Hell no.
He doesn't press. He doesn't. And he never.
GDK,
he never pressed.
Whatever.
He hardly ever pressed like Nene. He wouldn't press her. No. He pressed Vicky a little bit on OC, but not.
She
enough.
Would have got up and walked away. Vicky would not have handled that.
He never presses the really big ones, the ones who like feel like it's their show. All the ones who feel like it's their show. This is my show, you know. But anyway, we're talking about the wrong thing. Let's talk about passions. Where the hell was I?
We were talking about the party and Julian doing his toast to Ethan and his bride to be.
So he gives a toast to Ethan and his bride to be. Does not name Teresa by name. Asks if anybody else has anything to say. Then that reporter like pops up, which was weird because then we skipped over that entirely. That was like at the end of one episode. And then we went to a new episode and they did that whole scene again, but did it differently, which was weird. So I took notes for something that didn't actually happen. So Ivy makes a toast to love. Chad makes a speech saying how proud he is of Ethan and that the two of them are proof that two people can overcome anything if you just believe. You just have to believe in yourself and you can overcome anything. He's so sweet and naive. I love him. So anyway, that reporter got kicked out again. Julian has him escorted out by Ethan and Luis. They escort him out. He manages to find his way back into the mansion somehow, into Julian's office. Again, it doesn't matter because it's really not important. It's just a question of how, you know, how did you manage to get back into the mansion?
Or shitty security, like you're the cranes.
Right. But anyway, he makes his way back and Julian catches him in his office. And, you know, before Julian can get security and have him thrown out, he just shows Julian that tabloid, and Julian is rendered speechless. This man says, "Cat got your tongue, Mr. Crane." Poor Julian. Oh, I felt so bad for Julian in this part. Honestly, I did. Because Julian gets pissed. Okay.
Well, this came so out of left field for him. This was the last thing he expected.
Yeah, he sees the tabloid and he opens up his drawer and pulls out his gun, and he's like making known, like, he's not even saying words, he's just growling. And
as Ben Masters does so well.
Mm-hmm. And that reporter's like, "Oh my goodness, you're gonna kill Sam Bennett, you know?" And Julian says, "Who says I was going to kill Sam Bennett?" And then he says, "What kind of low-life dirtbag invades other people's homes with filthy, destructive lies just to sell newspapers? How dare you print that Ethan is not my son? I may not have won any Father of the Year awards, but there's no man who loves his son more than I do. Ethan is my firstborn, fruit of my loins, the light of my life."
Yes, oh, Lana Del Rey.
Bad for him. I did. I felt really bad for him. He was really upset. And at the thought that Ethan's not his son. And Julian says, "You made a big mistake coming in here, crashing this party. You underestimated Julian Crane." And he points that gun right at that man's face. And the man's like, No. You need to read. Please just read what I have. You know, there's proof that your wife kept this secret from you for years." And that's when Julian, this was cartoonish, Julian goes, "Did you say secret?" "Did you say secret?" Because for anybody who hasn't been listening, if you're just now tuning in, Julian has been trying to figure out literally what he has called Ivy's secret for all 400 episodes. Like, he's been trying to figure out, what is, I know she has a big secret. What's her secret? I know you have a secret. Tell me your secret. So that word triggered him. Secret triggered him. He's like, "Because I know she does have a secret." Well, honey, he starts reading that letter from Ivy to Sam. And this is the first time I heard this. This is news to me. The reporter says that in the letter, Ivy wrote to Sam that Ethan is his son, but she plans to pass him off as a Crane. I had never heard that before. I didn't know that was what was in the letter.
No, that's different than what we've been told this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we are with them. Then Alistair gets the tabloid basically at the same time. And so he calls Julian. Oh, this was so sad. Oh, I feel so bad for Julian. I know I won't stay feeling bad for Julian, but right now, oof.
Yeah.
Alistair calls Julian and says, If this is true, I vow to destroy everyone involved." Then he says to his own son, "If this is true, you're an even bigger jackass than I ever suspected. A cuckold in every sense of the word." I mean,
I gasped. I was shocked.
It was nasty. I shouldn't be shocked though, because Alistair is fucking awful.
Yeah.
Then he tells Julian to put him on speakerphone, and he tells the reporter to get out. And if you don't leave, then I will make sure basically that your paper goes under and you never sell another story anywhere ever again. You will never work again, sir. So that guy leaves, kind of. He goes to the party. He goes out the back door and then somehow finds his way back into the party. The Crane security, they must all be drunk. They're all drinking the champagne too. Nobody's paying attention.
Maybe it's a team Rebecca hired.
Well, it's interesting because he had such a hard time getting into the party in the first place. Like, the security was really on top of it. So where are they now?
Maybe it's the same security team from Tarek and Mikhail Salahi at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Stop. Oh my gosh. What a deep cut. Wait a minute. What a deep cut The Real Housewives of Washington, D.C. You know, because they only had that one season.
Yeah.
It wasn't good. It was a bad season. That was like the most exciting thing that even happened that season was that they snuck into like a state dinner. Didn't they sneak into like a state dinner?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the Obamas. And yeah, where the Secret Service was really slacking and lacking. Yeah, that's funny. So yeah, this reporter sneaks back into the party just in time to see Julian lose his fucking shit. Julian comes back to the party with that paper in tow, and he's kind of holding it close to his chest, and he doesn't know what to say. Oh, bless his heart. He runs into Grace on the stairs, who says more annoying shit. He runs into her on the stairs. She's going to the bathroom or something. He sees that Sam and Ivy are dancing together. He says, oh, they're dancing together. And she says, yeah, I gave them permission. And do you remember what she said to him? I just remember it was very irritating.
I don't remember, no.
Damn. Because I just remember it was very, like, nauseatingly on the nose. And I was just like, go somewhere else, please. Oh, she says stuff about Ethan. She's like, you have a really wonderful son, and don't worry. I know that I keep trying to tell Sam that he and Ethan just got off to on a bad footing, but that they should be very, you know, get closer, and that they're both good people and this and that. Yeah, she talks a lot about Sam and Ethan becoming closer, and it just, you can just see how upsetting it is for Julian. I mean, she doesn't know. She doesn't know what's going on. So it's not her fault. But it's just like, go to the back. Don't you have to pee? Go in that baby pressing on your bladder. Go pee. So he comes down the stairs. And I do want to say really quickly that Alistair, before Julian runs into Grace and everything, at the end of their conversation, Alistair and Julian, Alistair actually says, I gotta hand it to Ivy. I actually have to give it to her, give her credit, because she kept this secret masterfully. So there's the end of my theory that Alistair knew all along. I really was like, I feel, how does he not know? She's constantly talking about it to Pilar. You know, he knows all of these other things, but doesn't know this giant thing that's been going on in his house for 25 years. But he apparently didn't know, y'all. So I was wrong. So at the end of that conversation, the last thing Alistair says to Julian, he says, go back to the party, find out if it's true. And if it is, bring me your wife's treacherous head.
Yeah.
Honey. That was my favorite line of the whole show. I think that'll be the episode of this, the title of this episode, bring me your wife's treacherous head. Like, oh my God. It's very Salome. You ever seen Salome? You know the story of Salome? It's an opera. It's whatever.
No.
Anyway, the Salome wanted the head of John the Baptist. Anyway, so she gets the head of John the Baptist, which is a great scene. But anyway, bring me your wife's treacherous head. Oh, yikes. So Julian comes back to the party with this paper in tow, sees Sam and Ivy dancing together, goes over and says, you're a tramp, Ivy, a tramp and a slut. Whoa.
That gets everybody's attention.
Yeah. Yells it in the party, yells it, which is interesting. But you know what? He's unhinged. And wouldn't you be?
He is untethered. Yeah.
Wouldn't you be? You know, I like to think I would try not to cause a scene just because they care so much about their image.
Yes.
So I like to think that I would try not to cause a scene, but that's, I don't know. I mean, this is the last 25 years. He loved this kid. He thought was his.
Well, his dad's calling him a cuckold. I probably cause a scene too, because for 400 episodes, he's been trying to find out Ivy's secret. But during that time, he's been seeing Ivy and Sam get closer and have all of these weird moments. And, you know, they're kissing under the mistletoe and all of these strange things. All of these dots are finally getting connected for Julian. And in some ways, it's even bigger than Ethan not being his son. It's this betrayal from his wife. And now it's being flaunted right in front of him. They're dancing together at the party. So
at his house.
At his house.
Yeah. So he makes a scene, honey. He says, I know exactly what you did and who you did it with. He said, and she's like, Julian, you're drunk. You know, she keeps telling me he's drunk. He's making a scene. He's like, no. You've lied to me. You lied to me day in and day out, year in and year out. He calls her a deceitful, duplicitous bitch, and then knocks over like a table of cakes, Teresa Giudice style, flips a table.
Oh, yeah.
Which was awesome. And then that's when Ethan steps in. And everybody's just kind of watching this in shock. Like, yeah, what the hell is going on? And that's when Ethan pulls his dad, his father aside. Well, Julian. He pulls Julian out to the foyer and is like, yo, man, what's going on? You know, father, you're drunk. He sends a servant to get him some coffee. He's like, we need to sober you up. And he says, you know, I know that cranes should always behave with dignity at all times. That's what you've taught me. And you're damaging our family's reputation. And Julian says, no, your mother did that. Your mother has damaged our entire family. And he says, by morning's light, the whole world will know how our family was destroyed by her and who she did it with. Ooh, child. And he says to Julian, he says to Ethan, you know, I love you. It's, oh God, it was so sweet.
It's almost like saying goodbye, kind of. It's the last time he's going to be able to tell Ethan this as his father to son.
Well, and I honestly, it brought a tear to my eye because Julian, they have this very tender moment where Ethan is looking at Julian and Julian's looking at him and he says, you really don't have a clue. He really, because I think Julian was wondering a little bit who all knew about this and has Ethan been in on this, you know, but he realized Ethan doesn't know. You really don't have a clue. And he says, you know, I love you, son. And Ethan says, I love you too, father. And Julian says, enjoy these last few happy moments. And Ethan's like, what the fuck? And Julian walks off from him. He's just like, and Ethan is left wondering, what is going on? What has my father acting like this? And that's when Julian goes back into the party, tells everybody, I have something to tell you. I'm sure you all think that my behavior was strange and outside the box, but let me just tell you, I have good reason to be acting the way that I'm acting. And he's standing there, and that's the end of the episode. Now, while all of this is going on, like the talk between Julian and Ethan, Eve speculates that Julian knows about Ethan and being Sam's son. She says that Pilar kind of speculates it, and Pilar knows that it's possible that somebody found out about it because she knew that the papers were on Teresa's laptop at one point. So Ivy's the only one who's like weird. She somehow is getting blindsided by this. Somehow she's blindsided by this.
Yeah, because Ivy thinks she's like, destroyed there's the evidence. No way. I've pulled the wool over their eyes for 25 years.
She thinks she's destroyed the evidence, so everything is fine. Wow. They really set this up beautifully. If I'm being honest, they set this up in a beautiful way. Though I am against the idea of this party being thrown by the Hotchkisses. You know, but other than that, they really set this up wonderfully. And so that's really where we leave it within this week. Eve and Pilar are basically feel like Julian's about to expose the secret. Nobody else has any clue what the fuck's going on. Ivy included.
Mm-hmm.
She's just so confused by his behavior and like, why is he acting like this? At one point, Sam talks to Grace about he talks to all of them, like Eve, TC, and Grace about how he knew that Ivy's marriage was bad, but like he didn't ever realize it was mm-hmm. how bad it was. And how he has like sympathy for her. So
well, it really says a lot. You know, we talked a lot about Julian and being humanized this week and all that, but it really says a lot that when Julian storms in and starts calling his wife a slut and a bitch and all of these things, people are like, oh, he just had too much to drink. It, like, what?
It, you you're don't right.
think that this goes deeper?
You're right. And it also says a lot about these people. Why isn't anybody stepping in? Yeah. Like, that was, it went on for quite some, quite and some time.
Like you said, the moment with Julian and Ethan was special. And like you said, it brought a tear to your eye. But it happened right after Ethan's mother was called all of these horrible names. Like, yeah. it came out of order, it seemed.
Yeah. I guess Julian, he was upset then seeing Ethan kind of calmed him down, especially knowing, realizing that they're kind of in the same boat, considering they've both just been lied to.
Yeah.
And so I think he does love Ethan. And that was the part I think that really made me emotional, was that we've heard him say it, but we've never seen the emotion. And we finally saw it. He's really hurt that Ethan's not his son.
Well, I think that Julian realized, because at first Julian thought that he was the one who'd been wronged, but I think in that moment he might have realized that the true victim, the person who was betrayed most was ultimately Ethan.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, poor Ethan. So we'll see what happens with this next week. Or we won't. We probably get all hell stuff next week. You know,
there's still some story to be had at the Bates Motel, I think.
Yeah, next week I think we're probably going to get a bunch of like hell stuff, Bates Motel stuff, and maybe finish out the week with this. I don't think
maybe Julian will actually show everyone the tabloid cover by the end of next week.
Yeah, I think they're going to stretch it out for a couple more episodes. But so that's it for the week. You got anything else to add before we go?
No, this was a great week to be sitting in. You know, if there was one week that I would say, Laura, just jump in and watch Passions for a couple episodes, do it now. But, you know, it's hard to, you know, sometimes the shows, you tell people it doesn't get good till season two, or you gotta hang on until season four and then it's really worth it. But like, it is so unfair to tell someone like, oh my God, you just have to watch 400 episodes of Passions and it's all going to come together.
And finally you'll be satisfied with the storytelling. Yeah, no. You got to watch 400 episodes for it to get good. No, you know what? For me, Passions, it has been good from the beginning. It's just it's a little slow sometimes, and sure. Then sometimes it's like moves at the speed of light.
Oh, totally.
They can't decide what the pacing is.
The first year was just, it was so full of that novelty and that nostalgia, the first year of Passions, where the viewers really, because usually in a soap opera the viewers know everything and we're going along for the ride as the characters figure things out. But at the beginning of Passions, we didn't know Eve's history with Julian, we didn't know about Sam and Ivy, and it was, I don't know, there's just such a cute novelty of the carnival and Paris and being along for the ride from the get-go.
You know, I mean, it's the first soap opera I ever started from the beginning, you know, because most soap operas had been on the air since the 60s, the 70s, you know, the 80s. So it's like, I didn't start those shows. I didn't know what the hell, what Marlena's backstory was on Days of Our Lives. You know what I mean? I learned that as the show went on, but you know, this was the first one where they actually, for me anyway, I was able to learn these characters from the very beginning. I imagine that's how all soaps start. You know what I mean? It starts out and you don't know anything about these characters. And then they start to slowly unravel and tease you with things. So, yeah, well, it's pretty good. Maybe I'll see if I can get Laura back on in a few episodes. I don't know, though. She's busy. All right. So, Stephen, remind everybody where they can catch you at.
Sure. You can catch me on Twitter at Stephen Wenzel. I write all over the place. I write for City News Halifax, rabble.ca, and I have my own weekly publication, The Blueprint. It's theblueprint902.substack.com.
All right. And remember, you can always catch me on social media when I'm on there. I'm trying my best, but it's a struggle. You can always catch me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, mostly at Passions Podcast. You just search Passions Podcast, you'll find me. So, all right, with that, okay. You are my passion for life.
You do it much better than I can.